Hello and welcome to the John Markham Leadership Podcast. My name is John Markham and I am the lead pastor of Life City Church here in Santa Clara, California. Today is January 12th and this is the first of what I hope to be many podcasts on leadership. Just a little bit about me in case you don't know who I am. In addition to being the pastor of Life City Church, I have a wife and four kids. My wife Tiffany and I have been married for almost 13 years. And yes, I said four kids, so if I sound tired, it's because I probably am. And all that just to say I love my life, and I've gotten to a place in my life and family and ministry where one of the most important values to me is to have the chance to pour back into other current leaders and future leaders, others who are planning to go into ministries especially, or those who are just beginning in ministry, to help you in your journey of not just following in Jesus, but leading others to follow in Jesus as well. And over the course of the time that I do this leadership podcast, I plan on introducing a few friends of mine who will share in an interview style of podcast to get additional perspective and insights into leading the church and to leading in life. And so I hope to be a blessing to you and be an encouragement. These podcasts I intend to keep short, right around 20 to 30 minutes each at the most, I hope, so that you can enjoy it as you're commuting to your job or ministry or whatever that looks like in your context, and be encouraged and blessed. And so all of this you can find at my website, johnmarkham.org, and there will be some other useful writings and tools there that I hope will be a blessing to you as well. I've been blogging for about 7 years, and I've written on everything from just life and ministry and sharing the scriptures and philosophy of ministry to tools of ministry and how to preach and how to lead and how to do some things that I've been blessed to learn over time. One of the most important lessons that I've learned is that leaders are learners and that it's important that we pour back into each generation. Here in this first podcast, that's what I want to specifically do is to pour into the next generation of ministry leaders. And so just a handful of things that that I've decided as a leader of a church plant, as a lead pastor of a church plant, that I was going to do. That's what I'd like to talk about today. Six decisions I made as a lead pastor of a church plant. A little bit of context. I've been in full-time ministry in some capacity for about 14 years. I was in full-time ministry in some capacity for about 10, 11 years before I became the pastor of Life City Church. And with that all said, my previous experiences have given me a lot of opportunity to preach, to lead, to counsel, to manage. But never before had I been a lead pastor before I planted this church. And so while I think I had as much of opportunities and experience and education could afford me in preparing me for this role, there's nothing like stepping into it for the first time and having to learn as you go. And I am constantly learning. I'm constantly reading. Here in a few weeks, I'll be attending a conference and workshops. I try to consistently seek out and learn and grow and develop myself. And there's a lot I could say about that. But all that just to say, there were a few things that I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to be true of my leadership as a lead pastor. And I had one strong advantage in starting a church, and that's that there was a lot of these things that I was able to define from the beginning that I didn't necessarily inherit in an established church. And so we're able to define a lot of this as we go. There's also a lot of disadvantages, by the way, to starting a church from scratch. I feel like all my friends in ministry that were pastors of established churches and didn't have any experience with church planting, all they saw was the opportunity in starting from scratch and things that maybe they would like to have avoided if they could have done anything about it in their contexts. But it had a lot of obstacles as well. But these are a few things that were certainly true as advantages for me from the very beginning. And I just want to talk about them briefly. Decisions that I made as we were shaping Life City Church and things that maybe could be applicable to your context as well, or maybe things that you'll start thinking differently in your context. Number one, I decided early on that I wanted to be the pastor of a church that I would like to attend. And that may sound so simple, but I think that there's a lot of pastors who that's not true of. And there's a lot of reasons why I think pastors get into that position. I've got many friends in ministry who are pastors of established churches that they're working hard to lead a church through transition, through change. And it takes time, it takes energy, and it takes blood, sweat, and tears to to navigate a church through those difficult waters, especially if it's a church that has seen better days behind them, and they've either plateaued or they've peaked and they've kind of declined, and so now you're the pastor of a church that you're trying to turn back to being a healthy, growing church that's making an impact for the gospel in your community. And so maybe right now you're in a position where you wouldn't say that, but as the pastor of a church plant and starting from the ground up, this was something that was really important to me that I knew was important for my longevity in this church and in ministry, that I had to pastor a church where I was free to be comfortable in my own skin. And a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about after this today are certainly built off of this. And so that was really important to me. The joy of the Lord shall be my strength, talks about in Psalms. And so I want to pastor in a church where I'm free to be who I'm called to be in Jesus, and that I am able to lead from that place of strength and joy. And I just feel like that's better for a pastor in general, that if you're not comfortable in your own skin in a church, that if you're not comfortable being yourself, and it's not a church you would even consider attending if you weren't being paid to, you know, lead it, you're not going to be there long, so you either need to make changes in that church, or if you're starting a church, as I did, then you need to kind of keep that forefront. That doesn't mean be selfish and make the church all about you. It just means make this a church where you would feel comfortable attending, even if you weren't the one preaching and leading and pastoring it. Number two, and this one was just as important as the first one, maybe more important in a lot of ways. Number one was I want to pastor a church where I would want to attend. Number two is I want to pastor a church that my kids would want to attend. We've all heard the bad jokes and sad statistics of PKs. Those are preacher's kids. And the running joke is that preacher's kids tend to turn out rotten. And the unfortunate truth is that there is some validity to this claim. And we probably, if you've been in church for a long time, you probably know some preacher's kids that turned out rotten. And there's a lot of reasons for this. One, I think, is that it's easy to take some of the advantages that you have for granted when you live so close to something that is so consistently a part of your life. It's easy to take it for granted and to resent it. And familiarity breeds contempt, as it's been said. And I think that's part of the reason. I think another part of the reason is the strain that ministry puts on a pastor's family. I think that another reason is that because of the first reason, because you don't enjoy being a pastor at your church, you wouldn't attend this church if you weren't the pastor, there creates a false dichotomy. There comes a false kind of, not false dichotomy, but a dichotomy, or an actual dichotomy between who you are in your ministry and who you are at home. And when you're home, you're tired and you're exhausted and you don't want to be a part of the church, you don't want to talk about it, and you're frustrated, and you even badmouth your ministry because you don't enjoy participating in leading this church. And your kids see that, and they become jaded against the church in the process. I want to share a quick story in regard to this that's actually a positive story, and it really just kind of revalidated, reaffirmed this as a decision that we made a long time ago, my wife and I, as we were leading towards planting this church. My youngest daughter, Kaliana Grace, we call her Callie, she has been friends with a classmate of hers at her school for the majority of the time that we've been living out here in California, and the majority of the time that we've started Life City Church. And we call our children's ministry Kids Town. We make a really big deal about it being a great place for kids to learn about Jesus on their level. And we love it, and we constantly get great feedback about the quality of our children's ministry, even though we're a small church on a shoestring budget. We constantly get great feedback from children and parents. And all that to say that that Callie was inviting her friend Sophie to come to church with her. You need to come to Kids Town with me, and we talk about Jesus, and these are the songs we sing, we play these games. And it really was something that over time, Sophie began coming to her parents. Now her parents are great people. Bill, her father, had come from a Catholic background, but wasn't necessarily engaged in the Catholic Church at that point. And her mother, Marcia, wasn't really from a very spiritual background, very church-related background. And so they both were kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this. You know, when she started asking to go to Kidstown for church with my daughter. But eventually it got to a point where Sophie was like, you know, I want to go to church and I want to learn about Jesus. And especially for Bill, who at least had some kind of church background, it's kind of like, like, how do you tell your kid, no, you can't do that? And so he felt kind of bad, and they felt kind of bad, so they talked about it, and they're like, okay, fine, we'll come and we'll give it a chance. That first Sunday they came, They loved it. Their daughter loved it. They got connected. And over time, we saw them make decisions for Christ. We saw them make professions of faith in Jesus, get baptized, and are still a part of our church and are still growing in Jesus. And it all happened because my daughter invited her friend to come to church because she loved her church. Do your kids love your church? Do your kids love participating in your ministry and in your children's program or your youth program if your church is, you know, if you have teenagers or if your church has a youth ministry? If the answer to that's no or you're not sure, I'd really encourage you to dig deep into that and to ask some more uncomfortable questions about why. And then get to a root of what am I going to do about it? Because I don't want my kid to be another bad statistic of preacher's kids. I want my kids to grow up to become fully mature followers of Jesus that love the ministry, that love the church, and want to be a part of it even if they move on somewhere else in some other place in life. That this is still a part of their identity and their passion for the things of God, even if they don't necessarily go into ministry themselves and follow in your footsteps, that they at least follow in your path of following Jesus, whatever that looks like for them. I want my kids to grow up loving the church, loving the ministry, loving the gospel and its effect and its power in people's lives. So number one, I wanted to pastor a church that I would want to attend. And number two, I wanted to pastor a church my kids would want to attend. Number three, and there's a little bit of symmetry between these first three, I want to pastor a church that my unsaved, my unchurched friends would be willing to at least try out. In my opinion, I'm going to state it as such, but I'm going to state it as a strong opinion. In my strong opinion, if you're planting a church especially, but if you're pastoring a church, but if you're planting a church that is built around satisfying a niche in Christianity, then I don't believe you're doing, that your church is doing what Jesus intended it to do. Jesus said in Matthew 16, Peter said, but Jesus affirmed that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and upon this rock he would build his church. He'd later go on to Matthew 28 after the resurrection to give the Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations. And if your church is not, at least in some capacity, in some format, I know there's different styles and philosophies of ministries, and I'm cool with all of that. I think that's part of the beauty of the body of Christ at large. But if your church in some fashion or capacity is not actively engaging and reaching lost people and making them feel welcomed, not necessarily their sin welcomed, but them as a human being that Jesus died to save, if you're not making them feel wanted and welcomed in your church, then I'd question whether or not that's a real church. I question whether or not that's a church that is doing the mission of the gospel and reaching out to a lost world. That doesn't mean that you don't preach on sin or that you don't or that you compromise doctrine or something ridiculous like that. But it does mean that, like Jesus, you're full of grace and truth. You can speak on the things that the scriptures speak about, but you can do so in a way that calls people into their potential. One of the ways that we say that at Life City Church is we speak life. We'd rather be known by what we are for rather than by what we are against. And what we simply mean by that is not that we don't preach on sin, because we do. Our people know that we do. I'm very direct about it. But we do so in a way that calls people into their potential, not rub their nose in their past. And I think that if you're going to be a church that reaches the unsaved, the unchurched, that you've got to be focused on speaking life, calling people into their potential in Jesus Christ. And so number three is I wanted to pastor a church where my unsaved friends would be willing to give a chance, they'd be willing to attend. Number four, I wouldn't let mature Christians define our church culture. That I wouldn't let mature Christians define our church culture. Now, I got to elaborate on that a little bit because that sounds a little fishy to some of you. And in my notes, as I've kind of prepared for this podcast, mature is in brackets. And what I simply mean by that, or is in quotes, rather. And what I simply mean by that is that in a lot of backgrounds, in a lot of churches, in a lot of people's perspectives, spiritual maturity means something very different from how I believe the Bible teaches it, how I'm trying to live it in my life. And let me elaborate on that. When we say maturity, or we think of spiritual maturity, or a mature Christian, we tend to think of people who are older or who have been in church the longest or who know a whole lot of the Bible, who dress a certain way, act a certain way, and so on and so forth. And I get all that. There's perhaps some consistencies that you can find in those things. Some of the people who poured into my life the most and who have mentored me and helped disciple me are older, mature people who have known Christ for a very long time. But there's a difference between tenure and maturity. Just because you've been somewhere a long time or have even learned a lot doesn't mean that you are mature in your spiritual walk. Knowledge does not equal discipleship. That was a foundational conviction of mine before we ever began. Knowledge does not equal discipleship. Just because you know the word does not mean that you are living the word. Knowledge does not equal discipleship. Obedience to Jesus is discipleship. Doing the things that Jesus taught, that's what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And so what I mean when I say I wouldn't let mature Christians, quote-unquote mature Christians, define our church culture, is that a longer church is established, and the larger it gets, and the more people it has, and the more quote-unquote mature people are, and the greater the resources and the budget and so on and so forth, the more there's a temptation for vision drift to get away from, even what I was talking about in the last point about reaching unsaved people, there's a temptation to get away from reaching the lost and making disciples and inviting people to experience life in Christ. And there becomes a tendency for a vision to drift towards programs and towards creating opportunities for people who already know Christ to continue to do life as a church member. And so there's this program, that program, that program, and none of them are built on making disciples. None of them are built on creating followers of Jesus. They're all built on us fellowshipping or doing things that we enjoy together. And you should do things that you enjoy together, but that is not the mission of the church. That is not the mission that Jesus gave to the church to go and make disciples of all nations, of all people. And so we were very insistent right up front that we'd keep the main thing, that we weren't going to let, at any point in our church history, as long as Jesus lets us do this thing called ministry, we weren't going to let that be part of the definition of our church, that we're going to create programs to satisfy people who already know Christ. We're going to constantly be asking everything on the paradigm of, is this helping us lead people to fully experience life in Christ? So that's number four. Number five, we wouldn't waste time on facade. And this kind of ties back into several of the other points about church that I, you know, would attend, that my kids would attend, that my unsaved friends would attend. But we won't waste time on facade. We want to be neat, we want to be organized, we want to be intentional about the things we do. But we're not going to put up an act. We're not going to pretend to be something that we're not. Not me as a pastor, not our leaders, not our kids. My kids run around in church. I scold them in front of people. Because I'm the pastor, I'm trying to set an example. Well, no, because I'm a dad and my kids are disobeying and they're not supposed to run around and knock things over. So I'm trying to keep them under control because my kids are young. And we don't hide that. We don't hide our struggles. We don't hide, you know, we don't dump all everything out, you know, on the floor like our, you know, dirty laundry for everybody to criticize necessarily. But we don't hide anything. We don't waste time trying to make people think something of us that you know makes us feel better about ourselves. It's exhausting, quite frankly. It's exhausting to maintain an image of what people expect of you or think of you because of their background or their history or their beliefs that may not be rooted in the gospel. It's tiresome. It's freeing to let those things go. And what I found, and this is why this is so important to us, when you let go of the need to live within this construct of making people look at you a certain way or think of you a certain way, you also enable them to do the same thing. And one of our values, one of our obsessions as a church, is authenticity. And we say like this, we say we'd rather be honest about our weaknesses rather than fake about our strengths. And we'd rather be honest about our weaknesses rather than fake about our strengths. And we just found that when we begin to let go of some of these preconceived ideas of what a pastor and a pastor's family are supposed to look and act like and be like, it freed our people to do the same thing. And as we watched it free them to do that, we observed that people were not just being honest about who they were, but they were getting help for the things that needed help, and they were getting accountability for the things that they were struggling with. And we found that this was actually a better way of making disciples. And so the way we dress, the way we speak, the way we do life is no different on a Sunday morning than it is on a Friday night. We are the same people, and we encourage authenticity, and we drop the facade, and we say things like it doesn't matter who you are or where you've been. You matter to God, and you matter to us. God cares more about where you're going than where you've been. So don't feel like you gotta suddenly clean up and put on a suit and tie and dress a certain way and act like everything's okay when you just had a fight the night before with your spouse or your kids. Come and just be honest and be real. And you don't have to dump your dirty laundry out either, but you just have permission to let go of this need to impress people and to be honest about what you're struggling with and to find help and hope and healing in the name of Jesus. And that just became a central core to our identity, and it tied right back into creating a church that we enjoyed participating in, that our kids enjoyed, and that our unsaved friends enjoyed. And last of all, and this one's so important, number six, we will unleash the church, not control it. We will unleash the church, not control it. In some of the backgrounds that I've participated in, both growing up and serving in ministry as an associate pastor in a few places, there are churches that have worked so hard creating this organization of the church that was so busy doing so many things that there was just a lot of demand on people's time and energy and relationships. And what I mean by that is that, Sunday morning there's any number of worship gatherings that are, you know, identical, or maybe there's a conservative or a traditional and a contemporary kind of a set up and whatever, it's fine. But then Sunday night there's another Bible study program thing that you know you're kind of expected to go to if you're a real mature member of the church. And then there's a Wednesday night prayer meeting, and then there's Tuesday night visitation, and there's Saturday morning men's breakfast, and by the time you get done with all that, any given week there's like six things you got to do. And if you don't come to five out of six of those things, then you know you just don't really love Jesus like the rest of us, or at least this is the appearance of things. And I don't think that most pastors even mean for it to turn into that, but it kind of evolves into this, you know, these are the real followers of Jesus. And what I find that just happens as a result of that is that people just don't have a lot of time to do the things that you're actually teaching them to do. They don't have time to date their wife. They don't have time to raise their kids and disciple their family. They don't have time to interact with their neighbors and have a barbecue and talk about the things of God with them. They don't have time for that. And so we just came to this place where we're like, one, that's exhausting for me to maintain. What's got to be for my people to have five, six, seven things every week, it feels like, that they've got to do if they're a real serious part of our church? And so we just decided we're going to minimize so much of those things. We don't have so many programs. Every time somebody has an idea for me to do a new ministry or to start anything, we first of all, I ask them if they're willing to start it, because I don't have time to create eight more programs. but if they're not willing to start it, or if they are willing to start it, I say, great, let's start a life group that does that. And so what it looks like for us is we have our Sunday morning worship gatherings, and as we grow, I'm sure we'll have multiple Sunday morning worship times to accommodate more people to be able to come and participate. But we have that, and then we have a midweek life group is what we call them, small groups, Bible studies, whatever you want to call that, whatever makes sense in your context. And those meet on different nights, and some of them not even on nights. We had one this last fall that met on Saturday mornings, and it was a running life group. They'd get together, they'd do a devotion, and they'd go run for like a 5K. And I didn't participate because, you know, I hate running, but that's just me though. But we think that's awesome that people are doing life together and discipleship, and we think that's the best place for discipleship is in real life and doing things that you would normally do and combining those things. But we don't have like 16 other things that people have to do. There's not a 100 programs. We have a few events that we do a year, usually centered around different focal points. We have a community Easter egg hunt. We have a Kids Town Live thing we do. We do a fall thing where we give out meals to families in need for Thanksgiving. And you know, there might be one or two other things in a given year, but that's about it. We don't like loading up people's week with dozens of things that they've got to do to be considered a mature follower of Jesus. We want them to go and spend time with their neighbor. We want them to interact with each other. We want them to build relationships organically both inside the church and outside the church. We want them to date their spouse. We want them to take their kids out and to teach them the things of God, not just, you know, take them to church and dump that on us to teach them how to be a follower of Jesus, but to live it with their families. And so those are just some of the things that were important decisions that we made. This is, I've been a lead pastor now for a little over 3 years. This is my first ministry position as a lead pastor, and if I have it my way, my only one as a lead pastor. I love my church, I love where I'm at, but in the process of stepping into this role for the first time, even with the amount of experience in ministry that I've had, really there's a lot of things that I've had to learn in the process of doing it. On the ground training, you might say, on the job training. And with that said, these are just a couple of things that were decisions that I made from the beginning that I knew based off of my leadership style, how God had shaped my heart and my my life, that were important to me, that we were going to do, that I was going to pastor a church that I would want to attend if I wasn't the pastor, that I was going to pastor a church that my kids wanted to attend and weren't going to become a bad ministry statistic, that I would pastor a church, that I would try to pastor a church that my unsaved friends, my people in my life that knew Christ, that didn't know Christ, would be interested in trying out and giving a chance, that I wasn't going to let falsely mature Christians be the ones who are defining our culture, and that we weren't going to waste our time putting up facades and acting a certain way, that we were going to be come as you are, and last of all, that we would unleash the church, that we weren't going to control it, and particularly in regard to its time and how they interacted with people outside and inside the church. So that's it. That's six decisions that I made as a lead pastor of a church plant. And like I said, my name is John Markham. I'm the lead pastor of Life City Church in Santa Clara, California. You can find more on my podcast. You can find more information that I share, more tools that I've created at johnmarkham.org. And on that website, if you take the time, there is a menu option that's called Feedback. If you'll click that, you can leave a little bit of information. You can send me a comment on this blog, on this podcast. You can maybe even make a suggestion about a topic you'd like me to address or a question you'd like me to answer. And your question, your topic may just come up here on the podcast. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at John Markham. Or on Facebook, John.Markham. And it's been great getting to encourage you. I hope that this was something that you grew from, and I look forward to interacting with you next time. Till then, God bless.